Welcome to this episode of Wipe House Tales from the Sleepy Hot Laundry. I'm here with the beautiful Mel White. Welcome.
Thank you.
Again.
I think we should just be completely honest.
Okay, we had a technical issue. Hopefully it's resolved and this is actually recording. Otherwise we're just having a chat again. So the Mel White has an incredible story of her journey into yachting and what you've done afterwards. And I'm very excited to hear it again with more detail, hopefully. Oh, God, why? I just need to get to a point where I've got a producer on these things all of the time because it's just killing me. Absolutely killing me. Because I just get too excited about chatting about the people and getting into it. Yeah. So
Good, welcome, Mel, to the podcast.
It's very lovely to have you on. We better crack on and basically say, let's get into your story. So at the beginning, what was Mel doing?
Listen, it's really important, and you're not excluded from like an in joke here, but we have literally spent 20 minutes recording, so I will be repeating myself, but you guys don't know that. So
no.
I was at uni doing chemistry, which was a really poor choice, to be honest. I'd been herded through hoops and hoops of academia thinking that's the way to go, and to be honest, it wasn't. I found chemistry hugely stressful. I picked it because I thought I probably needed to get a job at the end of university, given how much debt I'd be in. And I thought, okay, there's a real need for female science teachers. But actually, I got to the end of my degree, I thought I'd never want to touch chemistry teaching. I literally just thought, I cannot teach students this subject, because I know I would be sat there being like, no. No,
it's really common, you know, like 90s, like for all of you young folk that are listening to this, in the UK in the 90s, everybody's like, go to university, go do something at university. But at 18, nobody understands anything about who they are. You know, there are the lucky few that just have a passion that they're obsessed about and it makes complete sense. But a lot of individuals are a bit not quite sure. They like a couple of things. And like you said, chemistry made sense in your head, but then chemistry at university is probably a completely different
experience. And it was so hard. And basically my first lecture, they were like, forget everything you've been taught to this point, because this is real chemistry. And I thought, oh my God, I am well out of my depth here. And I think it's true. I think at the time I really felt like I knew who I was, but retrospectively, I couldn't know. At 18, I really couldn't know what I wanted out of my career or who I was. I think definitely the relationships I've forged at uni, one of my best friends I have now and I contact very frequently, and was really such a solid friend even through yachting. And she was the best thing to come out of my university degree, quite honestly. And I
most
think
most expensive friend you've ever had.
Exactly. It's such an expensive friend.
I'm really glad I did uni and got into all that debt, because I got her.
I got her, but yeah, it cost me. I'm still paying that off, realistically. But yeah, I went into quite a corporate job after that, because I was like, okay, well, what do I do with a science degree? Well, the jobs are there. But then I'm now kind of shoehorned into science. And so I went into scientific publishing, and to be honest, I really just didn't enjoy it. Like, a corporate sphere isn't really my bag.
It's not really the bag for, like, pretty common for all yachties. You know, if any of them have tried a desk job for a bit, it doesn't work out. The idea of sitting at the same desk, seeing the same view, seeing the same people.
Yeah.
There's certain individuals that can tolerate. I normally could last about 2 years in a job. You know, like two years would be kind of, after that, you're kind of pushing it. And it's not necessarily the job, it's just the environment. It's just not interesting. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're doing chemistry, science obligations. But you're writing as well, though.
I did some writing. So I did did some writing for Chemistry World, which was a magazine that I worked at the Royal Society of Chemistry that published like scientific journals.
That was very exciting.
Which honestly, the only thing I could write about was like based on what articles were coming out. And so it was like so just limiting. It was limiting, I think, creatively. And I think that was something I reflected. Like, I am actually a really creative person. So to be in a job where there's no scope for creativity was just, I was on a losing streak.
Yes. So you're sat at your boring job, at your boring desk. How did you escape?
My boyfriend at the time, he had been working in yachting for the entire time I had been at uni and then taken this job. And a job opportunity came up for him. He'd been working for the boat builders. And a job came up for a couple's position to work on, you know, a small, relatively small sailing yacht for crew. It was to join two others. And yeah, and I thought, well, despite having absolutely no link to sailing whatsoever other than him, I thought, why not? It's got to be better than being in the office. So also, I just thought, you know, I mean, at the time I was, what, 22? So it's like, it was the right time probably just to be like, yeah, throw caution to the wind.
You've got no ties, have you? No ties at home, you know, your boyfriend is away, so that kind of kills that, so you get to see him more often, but you've just got to learn your sailing from scratch.
I do remember that as well, just thinking because there's so much to learn here, not least learning a new, it's not like when you step into a new job you have to just step into like a whole new lifestyle, you have to learn stuff that's just not second nature to you. And that just is, I mean, fortunately, I think especially when you go in a young age, you have a huge amount of energy. So even though it was like completely bamboozling at the start, it was all also tinged with the excitement of learning something new.
So it's the knots and stuff like that. Like, I was never going to be a deckie on a big one or a small one. Like, it's not happening. And no sane person would let me steer for sure. So, but did you, like, when did you, can you remember a moment where you're like, oh, I can actually sail now? Did it kind of crystallize and you're like, oh, I can do this? Because obviously you go through, like, all things, but, you know, when you're learning something so dramatic, yeah, from scratch, do you remember the moment where you're like, oh,
I've got this? Oh, it took a long while. I think particularly because I think when you're learning to sail on a yacht, you're not, I mean, most people learn to sail on a dinghy, right? So you can feel the boat a lot more. But when you're learning on a yacht, it's hard to get a sense and a feel for things. And also the variability of the weather is just so, or the conditions or the sea state. I mean, it impacts everything so heavily. So it felt like I had to do so much sailing before I could, it would solidify in my mind, like what would happen in certain scenarios. Which actually eventually became very helpful because then I could just sense by this, like how the boat was moving as to what was happening on deck. And that, I think probably that was a turning point for me. Like when you could hear certain sounds or just read each other as a team or as a crew and be like, okay, this is what we need to do. And it not feel like a complete unknown. I think that was, it's quite empowering really. I think that's what's so incredible about sailing in particular. And I think I do, there are still days where I think, oh my gosh, on really amazing deliveries, and like to be exposed to that kind of adventure is absolutely incredible.
It must be quite unique to be that tuned into your environment as well. Do you know what I mean? Like in a world, especially now, of countless distractions and stuff like that, to sail, you have to be in tune with your immediate environment, you know, otherwise you'll sink.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. And also you just, I think you're right. It was a way of living that was just so present. It was so all encompassing. And that had its pluses and, you know, its negatives. But I think, you know, it's really rare now that you can feel completely disconnected to the world. And I think really for a majority of my time I was working on yachts, even current affairs, I just didn't know what was going on. And I know that might seem a bit, I don't know, ignorant now, but actually it was hugely freeing at the time, but just to be like, well, I actually don't know what's going on because I'm so in this bubble. I don't know what country, you know, I'm not in the UK at the moment to be, it was all around the time of Brexit as well. I remember at one point in my career and I just like, I wasn't amongst any of the noise, literally none of the noise. And so in many ways that was quite freeing.
I think that's why, you know, certain activities become, I mean, you know, it is a challenge to stay present, you know, otherwise Eckhart Tolle wouldn't have written a multi-million pound book now, you know. But there are activities, like you said, you can't, you've got to be present to sail because otherwise, you know, you'll get into trouble. It's like rock climbing. Again, you can't really think about anything else when you're holding on, you know, like you haven't. Yeah. And that is a kind of peace in a way.
Yeah.
And I can see why, you know, once a sailor, always a sailor, because why would you want to come from that peace and clarity to the insane noise of the rest of the world?
Yeah, and also, I mean, you just have, I mean, providing it's fair weather, but even in like tough sailing, like really, I mean, I had experienced a lot of bad weather in the time that I was working on sailing yachts, and I think you kind of come out the other side and feel like, whoa, we got through that. Like it really tests your humanity because it's, you are literally in the elements. And I think we just live so separate from that every day. You know, we can find our food in the shop. We can, we don't have to really operate.
No, in the elements.
Certainly not in the elements like we used to. We're not cooking around a fire. So,
well, going to cooking, so when you, like, did they hire you just to be a sailor, or were you, did you have other responsibilities on board?
On sailing yachts, there are many hats. So initially I was hired as the stewardess. And probably with my ego at the forefront, I didn't find it very fulfilling. Service-wise, I love service. And I'd worked in hospitality jobs throughout my teens, and being customer-facing for me, I really enjoy. So in terms of that, it was quite fulfilling, but I really felt like I was, this might have been stigma I put on myself, but I think that I felt invisible kind of in when cleaning and doing beds and heads. And I felt like I wasn't taken, or maybe it was my assumption that I wasn't getting taken seriously, but I really wanted to be seen as like a worthwhile person. And I think that is definitely a self
it's not a self thing. It's actually how the industry views the interior team all of the time. So it's not you feeling that way. It's, that's how it's observed. But then part of the role is to be invisible. You know, you are supposed to be that invisible service, creating that standard. So it kind of, it's a double-edged sword. If you're doing your job really well, they shouldn't really know that you're around apart from at service. But at the same time, people seem to believe that it's a miracle that it happens, and it must be really easy for you to do all of those things because they didn't even see you do it.
No, exactly. Therefore, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It's this self-perpetuating environment that you make it look and feel so seamless, like you're not doing anything. So it doesn't really reflect how hard it actually is. So you don't get valued because, you're making your life harder for yourself. Like, you should be on the floor sweating.
It's almost a thankless task, isn't it? Because, like, the better you are at it, the less, noticed you are. But I think there was an opportunity to go into chefing because the chef had to step away because they were pregnant, into a shoreside position, and that gave me the opportunity to, I just stuck my hand up basically and was like, well, I can give it a go. Or like, it was hard, but I'd done an Atlantic crossing covering as a cruise chef, effectively, very different to charter chefing. But for some reason, I like to be able to
I've never done it before.
Let's give it a go.
Pattern. I feel like there's a pattern.
A pattern emerging there. And so But I kind of felt like my creative outlet could be better utilized basically in food. And in many ways, that was true. I think even though it was really hard at the beginning to learn, I think it was just hours and hours under the belt in the end that made it feel a doable job. And I think by the end of, like, particularly towards the middle and end of my career, I mean, I absolutely loved it. Like, it's like putting on a show, being a chef, particularly on a yacht, because you're tailoring all of the menus to people on board, and there's such a thrill to that. I think there's a way of looking at it and being like, oh, so often I get people who don't work in the industry ask, or like, oh, was it really challenging? Do you have really difficult guests? Like, people always want to hear that. And I'm like, well, actually, for the most part, I used to just really enjoy having the challenge of creating a really exciting menu.
Well, it's a game, isn't it?
It's
you
a
know,
game.
Like, the aim of the game, like, for interior is we want tips. So therefore, we will make sure that you have the best. And it's nice to make people happy as well. Like, we want to impress them. We want to give the wow factor. We want them to go, oh my God, I didn't even realize that you overheard my conversation and that was important to me. Do you know what I mean? It's that's the 7-star service, you know?
Exactly. It's where that you go beyond.
Yeah.
It's where.
Get good at it, that's the game. Like, that's what we're, everybody on yachts, that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for to wow.
It is a thrill.
And we're trying to wow people that get wowed all the time, like they're around all of stuff. So the ante gets higher and higher, like, right, okay. And then we build this impossible scenario where the boss is like, can I have this? And you're like, yeah, sure. I can do that.
Try and make
I'm not going to sleep for the next week, but it'll be fine.
Also, I kind of got to the point where I did feel like the longer I worked for on the same boat, for example, the more you could go back and say what was possible and what wasn't possible. And in some ways there was respect there over like being told there's a no or there's not a not really. I remember this really clearly when we were in the remote Arctic, and I'd had to provision so carefully for an 11-day trip, and you don't have the opportunity of having a provisioner just dropping by.
No.
And
I don't realise there's not any done.
So it was like, I remember, because the family that were on board, they loved fruit, and I was just like, I bought enough fruit for everybody to have X amount over however many days. Like, it's really important that everyone respects that, otherwise people are going to be, realistically, on the size boat we're on, or on going without, like, I can't meet that. If we were in the med, it'd be different. I'd be going short, you know, we'd be finding a way of getting you more, but we can't do that here. And they took it so well, and it was almost, it like added to the adventure for them. And then they like spoke about it amongst all of their guests, like, let's be, you know, be respectful and make sure that we're only having this number. And it's also then part of the experience for them.
You should have given them canned peaches or something, like, it's desperate times now, guys, here you go,
here's the tin peaches, enjoy everyone.
Well, no, that, like you said, it adds to the adventure. We couldn't get fresh fruit, oh my God, in Antarctica. Like, look, who would have thought it?
Exactly, who would?
Who would have thought it? So you're on board. What's like one of the standout highlights moments for you on board?
I think that there's probably a handful. One is definitely the Northern Light. So I was really fortunate to do a couple of seasons up in Norway and really, really far north. And I think the sailing there was hard work. it was hard to charter trips. It was also just so magical. And we really were able to just see the Northern Lights really readily. You know, we knew we'd be there for 3 months. We'd see them kind of every few days. And it never stopped being like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, this really is bucket list, like, tick it off. Felt incredible. I think most crew probably would say the wildlife. Like, I don't think I ever stopped getting excited by dolphins or whales. I think that is just, like, how fortunate to be in a place where you can be that close to nature
really Wales especially. Yeah. Like Wales is so enormous, and like it's just a real, yeah,
it's breathtaking. And you just think, oh, you know, we've found you, like we're in your space, you're not in ours. And there's something about that where you're not seeing them enclosed somewhere, you're in their environment, and there's just a level of respect there that I loved. I absolutely loved that. And then I think, to be honest, then another highlight is probably racing. I always used to really enjoy racing. Fortunately, we had a very active program on one of the boats I worked on, and we did a lot of racing, and that was so exhilarating, like so much fun. And I think there was this real blend during those weeks between the guests and the crew, where everyone was just like pitching in together, and always made it such an enjoyable week, or weeks if we did more than one, regatta in the year. And I think there's something in that thrill of competition, but also just people letting their barriers down and feeling like you could be more yourself in those weeks, really. I used to love that. And so, yeah, probably those three are going to go down in highlights.
So the highlights, where's there any moments where you're like, I don't like this anymore, this is a bit shit, I'm not in it anymore, like, and where did, you know, do you remember when you were like, what am I going to do after this?
There's definitely two aspects of that. So one is I'm always really upfront and open about my kind of mental health when I was in yachting, particularly my first couple of years. I really struggled mentally. I think it's well rehearsed now, people talking about the strains that people at sea feel, but I think, you know, we were away from family, your routine's completely different, wasn't sleeping well, and I also at the time was working in a crew dynamic that was just not healthy for me. There was bullying and harassment going on board, and I think it really impacted, all of those things in combination, I should say, really impacted my mental health. And I think I did experience depression in that time, and somehow it's possible people live with depression and all sorts, but I think, you know, I got the other side of it through a combination of factors, and the big one was that the leadership on board changed, and that created, even though it was the same boat, it created a completely different place to live and work. And that really helped, because that was something that could change, whereas sleep deprivation and, you know, all those other things that come with being working at sea, yeah, you can't, the number of hours you're working, you can't change that, really. So that was very helpful, but I would say that's my low light. And I think that when I felt established, when I decided, okay, I want to step away from yachting, I think it happened more gradually than I was expecting. I think mentally I was stepping away from it for quite a long time without it kind of impacting my work. Yep. And actually things had become autopilot. And it felt like at one point it would never become autopilot and it would always be exciting. But they're just at one point just thought, you know what, I've worked really hard here. I've done like enough years, and I was often, you know, I wasn't switching yachts very often, so I was working kind of 11 months a year with a month off, and I was just ready for the rest.
11 months with 1 month off is not enough. I technically would think that needs to be illegal, like,
yeah, under MLC it's compliant, but it's wild.
That needs to be looked at, because that's just not normal. Because if you get the wrong boat, you know, it's all right if a boat's spending money and you could be in a fairly decent marina and there is a decent winter period where you can get off at the weekend, but if you're on a dual season boat, like, dual season, that is not enough time to remain a sane person.
Exactly. And I think I just got to the point where I was like, okay, you know, I'm ready. I've moved initially to a bigger boat that was a new build and did a kind of new build project. And then I did a bit of temping as well after that. When I kind of decided, okay, I'm going to move away from yachting, I'll still go back and just do some temping over the summers. And it's so interesting because I realized when I went back to do that temping, I was like, no, do you know what? It feels like it's done. And I think that people do in the industry just reach that point when they know the door's shut now and that they're ready to put it down. But it's almost like a grieving process because it's become your identity for so many years that you're then like, wow, you have to assimilate back into normal life. It's so bizarre. But actually, fortunately for me, I stepped away just before COVID happened. And that was probably brilliant timing because it really shut the door for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so funny. COVID comes up loads of times. But it did back people into a corner, you know, like it did, you know, some people that were stuck on board for a long period of time kind of brought it to the end, you know, faster. Mm. It really did highlight, but it's so many cool things. Like, honestly, it's really quite funny. Like, I've got like a collection now of different stories because that forced period actually gave quite a few people headspace to think about other things.
Yeah, and I think when you're in the industry, you're wrapped up in it. You think this is all there is, and then all of a sudden, that bubble just it just gets burst. Mm. And I realized then I was like, okay, I'd really like when I reflected on my early years working, I was like, okay, I really want, when I come away, I really want to be able to impact the industry from the outside in a way that hopefully makes it as a pleasant working experience as possible for people still there or entering it. Mm-hmm. And I think that I came away with that mission, which solidified, you know, certain things for me. But I also found a life completely out of yachting. So I think at the same time as me leaving, not long afterwards, the boyfriend I'd had for all that time, we split. And I think that really, that breakup just, it helped me realign, even though it didn't feel that like that at the time, it helped me realign into a new life. And I found a life I really loved in like central London, and it was just so far away. It was so weird that, you know, I'd spent all of this time away and then I was in such a hubbub of a place, but that felt so exhilarating. And the people I met, and I actually wouldn't have my son now if I hadn't made that move. And, you know, it's those sliding doors things, but I think I look at it and I think, wow,
it's kind of ending a complete chapter, isn't it? That complete chapter is now. So when I left, I always said to myself, because having worked on my first boat with an interesting older chief stew, who clearly was, she just shouldn't be on board. She should have got off and gone on and got started on something else, but she was hanging on for dear life. And it was just being reflected. What she didn't like about us was what she couldn't have anymore. And I always promise myself, I want to finish on a high. Do you know what I mean? I want to finish that chapter in the best possible way, because you don't want to leave in the end because of, you know, something horrific if you can avoid it. But it's funny how life works out like that, isn't it?
It does. And I think in endings, there are beginnings. And I think even though I made the call to close off crewing on board, there was, because so much of my life ended up changing in the process, I was really fortunate that I could then have a really clean slate to reinvent, really. And I think, like so many interior crew, I think in particular, are so ambitious and have such brilliant ideas and have so much energy for their creativity. And I think there's something really exciting when you do decide to step away and thinking, oh, I can put all my energy into how I want to use that creativity now. So, even if someone's listening to this right now and considering whether to step away or considering whether they've made the right choice, everything comes clean in the end. It's always the next right step is always the best one.
So what did you step off to do? Did you have an idea? This time? No,
so, well, I guess I did. I did have some focus in that throughout the last 3 years I worked on board. Whenever I had time off, I was writing. So I started writing a book about my experience in my first 2 years of yachting. because there was very little literature around anything mental health at sea at that time. And if there was, it was kind of hidden under a shroud of NDAs, or it was kind of in articles and newspapers and never picked up. And I thought, well, people are never able to get kind of an honest account, really. And if I'm prepared to be able to publish my experience, then hopefully it either acts as a friend for people reading it who are on board, but also can have some clear evidence to support that people experiencing poor mental health at sea exists. And so I think that was a real driving force in me leaving, because I really wanted to get that book published. And then at the time, I managed to kind of, my ethos around that, just that acted like a magnet. And I ended up finding other people that were wanting to do the same thing at the same time, like Emma Ross. And yeah, and I was able to, weirdly, I actually went back into a corporate environment. So I got a job as policy advisor at the UK Chamber of Shipping. And I decided I would try and put my energy for trying to make seafarer well-being at the forefront into kind of a high level attack, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so it was great, because actually my boss was the person who co-wrote the MLC, and I was party to like big you know, meetings amongst big shipping companies that had huge influence over policy, and that all trickles down into yachting. And so like my years doing that subsequently, or the couple of years I did after that, just really it helped kind of shape my next chapter. Not that I
it must
more,
be really
course,
interesting
yeah. Sorry, I was gonna say, carry on.
No, I was just gonna say, it must be really interesting to see the industry through that lens.
Yes,
you know, to be, you know, kind of man on the ground, front line, and then to go all the way to the top where they make decisions that affect everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you can't, a lot of what happens in yachting just comes as trickle down from shipping and in merchant shipping. So it felt like, to me, like the obvious route to try and influence certification, training, all of this stuff, particularly for helping people have the tools to look after themselves. And I think, yeah, I was fortunately part of like the group that was deciding on the helm course at the time, that the MCA would go out to, and it would have the trade associations on one side, the unions on the other, and then the Merchant Navy Board on the other, training board. And it was, you know, for example, on the other end of the spectrum, when I was in yachting, so many people were like, well, helm, it's kind of like it does nothing because you only have 5 days, and it's the only leadership training that any formal training that any of the, you know, captains get. And so much could be done within that week. And then from seeing it, the other side of them kind of revising the training, you realize where all the decisions start getting made. Mm. And so it was so interesting to then be like, I really pitched actually to get mental health training put in as a part of that course. And interestingly, there was pushback because they agreed it was important, but they were like, it almost needs more than the time we've got. And that I could agree on, but then you end up left with a deficit where then leaders aren't receiving those soft skills that are really, really important for management. Yeah. And so it was so interesting, because then I was like, well, I can see why on the other side of it, people are really frustrated. But when you actually sit and you have to do those meetings and you're listening to all the debates, you realize that you can just achieve nothing effectively. Or you'll achieve something, but it won't be there for everybody. And that's a lot of what the certification training and also higher level policies, you know, they have to be impactful for.
I mean, we could do a whole episode on talking about this stuff. We will go on to talk about mental health and the industry and stuff like that in the next episode. But to be fair to the industry and fair to the big wide world, it's new. I know mental health has been a thing for a very, very long time, but I think perspective on mental health has changed. And also just like on land, they can't ignore it or gloss over it or just stiff up a lip kind of thing. Unfortunately, it just takes a little bit longer to get into the maritime industry in general, because it has that persona of you just need to be tough. You know, it's tough at sea. You've got to be tough. And there's a lot of perspectives and barriers. Do you know what I mean? Like these these ideas of what sailing, yachting, maritime is. I mean, baby steps, I guess, is the best way to do it. But you to be there, I mean, I would literally kill to be there. I would literally love to really kind of understand how they're getting to these conversations and why it's taking so long. I think that's the main thing. It would be really interesting to take out. So obviously coming out of the industry and then kind of looking back in from outside, you know, what of your observations, like how has it changed in just that short amount of time? Because there's lots of things that are moving, which are encouraging signs from your perspective now.
I think something I've reflected on, not wanting to go too deeply into the mental health angle so much, but obviously that is the area I work in now. I think it's interesting that 5 years ago or 4 years ago, when myself and Emma Ross were like approaching these conversations, there was a lot of education about what mental health is, for example, whereas now there's just a general acceptance that it's a thing, and particularly the younger generation coming up, that's what they expect when they're going on board. So it's encouraging to see that. I also think that I think there was a time where I really felt burnt out from chefing. I really enjoyed it. And my skills just elevated to a level that I didn't expect them to be able to elevate to. But stepping away and realizing I don't have to operate at that level all of the time was actually really freeing. And now when I like reflect back on the time, I'm just really proud of it and don't feel that kind of tiredness associated to it, which is really freeing. And I think so, you know, sometimes some skills, even just when I'm cooking for my toddler and you know, or for people I really love, I just think, oh, it's so nice that there is so much I've learned that just carries through into my life now for the better.
When you were like, so you obviously you've wrote a book, Between Ocean Lines, available on Amazon. I saw it. I checked it today.
Yeah,
it's hardback or on Kindle. obviously, other retailers may have this. What was the main drive to write the book? Was it to get something out of you? Was it more of a cathartic kind of you understanding your experience, or was it with an agenda to kind of help others? Because I know like people can approach books in different ways, you know. You start off thinking that you're writing a book about something, but then it turns into something else.
I think it's both those things. So I thought I was, my methodology was like, I want to write something as to be the friendly voice that I wish I had at that time, that if I dipped into that book that I'd feel seen and heard, and that what I was experiencing might not be okay, but it's part of being human, or that to kind of act as a calibrator to work out what I was thinking and feeling at the time. Or I think when people go through certain levels of harassment, for example, it's really hard to ascertain what's happened to you until you're beyond or past that form of relationship. And so at the time I thought I was writing to help others, but I think realistically it was a cathartic process, because I was able to work out how I thought and felt about it all. And even now, actually, I knew that book back to front, inside out, because obviously I wrote it, then I edited it lots, then, you know, it went for legaling, and then it went through, you know, my editor, and it went through the publishing process, and then everyone else's feedback when it came back. And it's so funny because now I feel quite a long way away from it, in that I see it when I read it, I hear the 20 something year old male, I don't hear the 30 something year old male. And probably if I wrote it now, I'd probably write it completely different. Mm. But then in many ways, it's then such an authentic piece moment of writing for the time. Yeah. And so in many ways, then I think, well, I can't and won't wouldn't change it, because it's a really, it's honest for who that Mel was, you know.
Yeah, it's quite, I mean, obviously there isn't, like you said, I mean, even now there's more conversation, there's more stuff around, but that the female experience on board is quite difficult, I think, in lots of different ways. But reflecting on what you've said just in this podcast, you're addicted to the challenge. Like, you've been addicted to challenges. I mean, obviously, the university one was probably more an error in the beginning.
Thanks, Charisse. I would definitely describe it as that too.
It's like, well, maybe a technical error. I didn't read the small print. No, it's... Oh, I've lost my train of thought because I was laughing too much now.
You were basically saying about challenges, that I was addicted to the challenge or challenges.
Females on board are addicted to challenge. And I do think you get addicted to the challenge and the pressure on board, because the pressure does create great things. It taught you to sail. It taught you to cook. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But also, I think there is a grey area when you're constantly in that kind of environment and that much pressure. This is where harassment and bullying can maybe get a bit distorted and harder to see, because it's all so intense and it's all so fast.
Yeah.
And you writing the book and reflecting on what actually happened, because at the time, because you're all just doing, you just have to get on, and you do just let things go, things slide, and you perhaps don't absorb it. You're absorbing it, but you're not really absorbing it the way that you should, because you're just too busy.
Yeah, you just are on automatic pilot a lot of the time, and there's very little room to kind of assimilate what is the person that needs to be able to function to do my job and do my job well, and what is myself, what do I think as me, and my morals and my values and all of those things, which quite often when it comes down to banter and stuff like that, it can become part of survival on board, but it also can really challenge and step into kind of abusive areas for people. Yep. And I think it's really hard to separate those strings, and I think it's okay to then have to be on some form of autopilot in order to survive and to do your job, right? Mm. And then it really was in kind of writing the book and taking the time out of yachting afterwards to be like, okay, right, unpick those strands a bit. And how has that made up who you are now?
I think the one way I'd describe it is, you know, when you're driving along really fast and then a stone hits your car. You know, it's hit your car and it's like, oh my God, like it's cracked my windscreen. But you're still going.
You're still going.
It's damaged your car, but you're still going, because you haven't got time to sort all of that out. And then until it stops, you like look and you're like, I've got a few damaged little nicks and this and that. Yeah. You know, the nature of the job, I think, you know, when it comes to females, like you said, you don't have time to think of your boundaries. You don't have to find time to, you know, I felt really uncomfortable at that moment. I didn't like that. But we've got charter tomorrow. It's like 2 hours before guests arrive. That's where this grey area ends up being. So everybody should just write a book like you and just let it all out.
It might not have the answers, but it does have some camaraderie.
No, but it's, you know, and I think that's obviously to go on to, you know, what you guys are doing now with Seize the Mind, you know, it's giving people information on how to process, let go, even in an environment that's not really giving you the time to kind of recognize what the hell's going on around you. And I think that's a really positive thing. Like I said, we will do a whole episode. I'm going to do my first three-way. I've decided.
You heard it here first, everyone.
Greenway podcast. Although we might try and do it. We might have to see if we can get a studio in London and do it.
That'd be good.
That would be really good. Yeah. And then somebody else can take control of the technical stuff.
Yeah. Exactly that. That'd be great.
So we'll cover what you've gone on to do probably with Seize the Mind in a lot more detail in the next episode, because obviously Emma's been on before and we've talked about her journey. And I think Seize the Mind, from my perspective, is like a pioneering force within the industry, and it deserves a bit of respect and a three-way. So, you know, we'll crack on and organize that. But talking, like, so obviously speaking to ladies that are on board, you know, a chef on board, she's, you know, they've just been through some really crap weather, getting to the Caribbean. She's over it. What are your three pieces of advice that you would give somebody on board for either surviving on board, getting on after? Like, what we, if you could tell Mel something, what would you say? You know,
I would say, one thing I would say is, when it comes to behavior that you don't agree with on board, but you've let slide, or that you've just gone along with in order to keep the peace, I would say it's okay to not have challenged everything. There's no, try not to feel guilty about that, and to make sure that really what, it's not always safe to challenge, and recognizing in yourself if something's uncomfortable versus unsafe. And I think then you can really let yourself off the hook if you do then step away from that environment and think, why didn't I call that out? Why didn't I do that then? You know, we're human. And also, if you didn't feel safe, it was not the time and the place to challenge it. And that's okay. I think the other thing I would say is, I'm probably always going to say this, but if you're feeling like you're living in your head and you're stressed and you're feeling overwhelmed and you can't see the wood through the trees, I would say just write something down on a piece of paper. Like, just try and get it out of your head, even if you do nothing with that except throw it in the overboard, you know, or rip it up and put it in the bin. Just try and get
really
what you're thinking or feeling down on a piece of paper, because that you can do on board. And
there's science behind that. So yes, you will fall asleep. So if, before you go to bed, if you just let out whatever is rattling around in your brain, you'll fall asleep 50% faster. Thought books were introduced to me years and years ago. If you want to, just, so a thought book is, you get a little moleskin, you know, classy, and write down whenever you feel like it and just let out, and then read it back. You'd be like, I maybe need to have a chat with myself, because when I read mine back, I'm like, I am just talking. What is that? You know, the internal critic is brutal, and you don't understand, you don't really, a thought book and something like you said, to just let it all out. I literally filled a book, it was only a little one, left it for a month and then read it, and it was the most horrific, shocking thing. I'm so mean to myself. It's unbelievable, and it's not necessary.
It's not necessary, and it's not who you are. Your thoughts are not always who you are, and so that is so helpful to just like separate that from yourself. It's really, it can be transformative for people to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So 100%. Recommend just getting, even if it's just for a minute, or like literally you can always afford yourself 2 minutes to set a time on your watch. And it's really interesting, because you will start writing, and when that timer goes off, you won't want to stop, because all of a sudden you're like, hang on a minute, I've got so much more to say. But like getting that out of your head, that's another one. And then probably my last thing to say is that every day is a miracle. I think, even if you're really down in the dump, I mean, I will say this in two ways. If you're experiencing any form of mental health condition like depression, it's going to be really difficult for you to see this feeling like a miracle. But if you are at the other end of the spectrum where you're on the whole mentally healthy, but you're having a really difficult day or a tough day, just remember every day is a miracle. Like it is, it, we live life on a very thin tightrope, and it's quite amazing that we are able to wake up in the morning and do what we do. So sometimes it's really hard to find gratitude, but even if I can't find gratitude, I do try and say that every day is a miracle. And it sometimes just helps me keep in check that I am just a drop in the ocean.
No, they're very, very wise. Very wise. You're so wise. Bells of wisdom. 100% pearls of wisdom. You've got so many pearls, honestly. Right. So, unfortunately, let's just do one more quick one and then we'll finish with a potential story if you've got one knocking around in that brain of yours.
I'll try.
One weird or wonderful story that happened in yachting. But in 5 years, what's Mel up to now?
Well, 5 years from now.
From now, what are you doing? What's going on? Affirmation, like I'm asking the universe for.
Yeah. Primarily, I want to be. I'm still going to say this annoying stuff that like everybody always says, but like seeing my family happy and healthy. I mean, we basically are happy and healthy now, but like being able to really reflect on my, like still be really happy with who I am as a person is like a huge goal. It always is. But I think coming postpartum, I'm 2 years from 3 years, actually, my son's 3 next month. I'm finally at a point at which I'm like, oh, I feel really happy normal. And comfortable and content and normal again in myself. And it takes such a long time to come the other side of that. So I think ideally in 5 years time, I'm really well the other side of that.
Well, you might have done it again.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see.
Get over and done with. Go. It just maybe, makes it harder to let go. I feel like, okay, I'll turn into a loon for another 2 years. I'm fine.
Yeah, but ideally, I work for myself now, but still be working for myself on projects that just keep my heart feeling full, really, that I always center back to. Working with people at the center, that's what's important to me. And I think when I start getting stressed or overwhelmed with work, just putting a reality check in and saying, is this aligned with my values? And if it's not, hopefully those things are shredded away from whatever I'm doing in 5 years time.
Very, very inspirational stuff. Very, very good. I love listening to all of this the second time around. You know, aww. It's good. It looks like it's recorded. Let's hope it has.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
So do you have a crazy story? Just one of those moments on board you're like, in no other place on the planet does this kind of stuff happen. It doesn't it can be positive, negative, funny. You know, we have had some very random stuff said on this podcast.
I think they're normally actually been like really like scare, like largely scary.
Mm-hmm. We've had stories about being shot at. So like, you know,
I think one of them was when all of our guests got caught in an avalanche and we were like trying to get them back on board and we weren't able to properly contact the bounty guide that had been staying on board, and we're like, oh, just something felt off about that day. And they came back on board and they were like, God, we're lucky. Like the people were shaking. Like, it was a bit like, hang on, what is my job? Like, what are we doing? And like, there's this expectation. Maybe 20 minutes before they came back to the boat, I'd cut my finger. It's my worst cut I ever had in the galley, but I cut my finger really badly. So I was like, trying to handle like a fairly profusely bleeding like finger whilst trying to support relatively stressed and shaky and
traumatized
guests. And then what was the third thing? Oh, and that was the same day that all of the engine room got completely covered in a fine mist of poo because they had an issue with one of the seals that burst. And all of this happened all within an easily within like a 2-hour period, and we were just like, what the hell is going on? Like, why is this our job? Like, what are we doing here? Why are
we here? It happens in trees. It only happens in trees.
That's exactly it. We were like, what's the third thing to happen? And the third thing was the avalanche. And we were like, oh, shit, yeah, that God had our number today.
Wow.
But yeah, that was probably my craziest day.
That's a course in itself you can pitch, you know, to the powers that be. How to deal with traumatized guests. Had a near-death experience.
Yeah, near-death. I mean, thank God no one did die, but it was, you know, we were often doing quite dangerous things on board, so with guests. We had like a bit of an adrenaline junkie owner, so it was like it was really exciting, but also like
scary.
Oh my God, how do we keep everyone alive?
Well, I'm glad everybody lived.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm very much looking forward to our next episode. I've got loads of other things I wanted to talk to you about. I was doing my research. You put some of your favourite books, like The Red Tent. Oh, loved that book. Loved that book. And The Shack as well. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You can reread that about a million times and get something different.
Really can.
Yeah, I've actually ordered your book, so I shall be critiquing it.
Thank you. Get your honest feedback as ever from Charisse. But yeah, it'll be lovely.
Although I'm a mother, so I probably won't read it until I'm on holiday.
Fortunately, it's written in very short chunks. Another reason. I was like, nobody has time to read anymore, and certainly if you've got crew. So it's all written in like 700-word chapters, so that's all very quick to read.
It is amazing, and what you've achieved is amazing. And I do like your fuck it attitude. I'm just going to try, even though I've got no qualifications or experience.
It's how men roll through the world. And tell you that, Charisse, it's proven. Men will get hired based on what they say they can do, and women will either not apply for a job because they don't have the qualifications, or they will feel like they can only do it if they have the experience. But how do you get the experience if you don't just say you can do it?
No, but we also live longer because they do stupid shit.
True. Very true.
All the time. Like, it's a miracle that my husband's 55, to be honest. Absolute. It's a miracle of science and just luck, really. But hey ho. Thank you so much for coming on. You've been a fabulous guest, and we will be obviously definitely revisiting you soon, hopefully from a glamorous podcast studio in London. If you've enjoyed this podcast, listeners, there are plenty of others for you to enjoy. We will be putting the link to Mel's fabulous book, and we'll obviously be putting links to Seize the Mind and everything she's up to if you want more information. Until next time, goodbye.